This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Plays it back for Ryan Johansson. Johansson stopped by Trouba. Johansson stays on it. Back for Subban. Subban for Forsberg. Back for Subban. Scores! Subban ripped it from the line. Connor Hellebuck got a piece of it. And the Nashville Predators score on the power play to take a 2-0 lead here late in the second period.
That power play goal by PK Subban proves to be the game winner from Thursday night as the Jets' home ice winning streak comes to an end. The Nashville Predators even up this best of seven Central Division final playoff series at 2 games apiece. It was a best of seven, then it was a best of five, and now it's a best of three. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's a good way to reach us here in studio. If you send us a tweet that we like, maybe we'll even read it on air. You can send us a text message in studio as well. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates apply. Same rules. If we like it, maybe we'll read it. And of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio, is illegalcurve.com.
May the 5th be with you, Drew.
That's not a thing. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. That other voice you just heard was Ezra Ginsberg, and the man on the far left is Dave Manuk.
I managed to get through an entire day yesterday in the office without anybody saying that. To me, it's annoying.
Yeah, no. Why would people say to you, "May the 5th be with you" on May the 4th? That doesn't make any sense.
No, I'm talking about people saying May the 4th, and I get it.
I'm surprised, Ezzy. Aren't you a Star Trek fan?
And that's very funny, Dave, as well. That's also quite clever. Today's happy Cinco de Mayo, though, of course, and Kentucky Derby Day. So, you know, lots going on in the sports world.
More of a Punta de Mayo than a Cinco de Mayo.
I understand. You're also the owner. What's the owner's name? Janice Mayo or something? Something like that from the Seinfeld episode. Anyways, gentlemen, good to see you. And, of course, the big main event of tonight, certainly a busy day in the sporting world. You got the Manitoba Moose game, and then later on tonight, 8:30 p.m. Central Time, you have Game 5 between the Nashville Predators and the Winnipeg Jets, the series shifting back to Nashville as one team looks to take a 3-2 lead, putting them one game away from winning this best of seven contest. Before we look ahead to tonight's game five, let's look back on Thursday night. Let's look back on the first 4 games of what has been a pretty epic series so far. Thursday's game, gents, Jets 2-1 lead in the series. They haven't lost on home ice since the end of February against these Nashville Predators back on the 27th of February. The place is rocking. Jets looking to take a commanding 3-1 lead on the Predators. The Predators, I think, certainly played their best game of the series. You can certainly make the argument they probably played the best game that they played all playoffs long in absolutely stifling the Winnipeg Jets on the way to that 2-1 win on Thursday night.
Yeah, Drew, especially from a defensive point of view, right? You know, the Jets were clearly frustrated at points in the game, and fans were obviously frustrated at points in that game because you expect, you know, the Jets to pop a couple of goals in every single game. Not only a couple of goals, I mean, this Jets team averaged, what, 4 goals a game against the Predators. The Predators also averaged 4 goals a game against the Jets during the regular season, but it was as dominant a defensive performance as you're going to see, and especially in the third period, when the Predators were holding on to that 2-0 lead, and they were perfectly happy to just flip the puck out, flip it off the glass, you know, shoot it off the boards, whatever you needed to do. You had, you know, several icings in the third period, and you know, that was a crucial game for them. If you go down 3-1, we talked about this on Wednesday's show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a must win for the Predators. I mean, they were a desperate team, but they played a very composed game. Pekka Rinne was very solid. He obviously makes that miraculous save with the knob of his stick on Josh Morrissey,
mm-hmm.
but he made several other key saves. Didn't have to necessarily steal the game like Hellebuck did in game one, but
sure.
He was really solid. And let's be honest, guys. I mean, we knew that this Predators team was one of the best defensive teams in the league. What were they? Second in the league as far as goals against goes during the regular season, right? So, I mean, it should be no surprise to anybody, Dave, you know, that the Predators are stingy defensively. I mean, they knew after Game 3 when the Jets put in five goals, because two of those were empty netters.
Sure.
I mean, they knew that they had to be better defensively. They were giving up too many odd man rushes. So the Predators have tied this series up, and really it's anybody's series right now. And, you know, we've seen two of the other four series, because Tampa Bay's up 3-1 on Boston, tied right now. I mean, these teams are very evenly matched. We knew that. And sure, the Jets had a lot of momentum, Dave, going into game four, but you know, that's a huge win on the road for the Predators. And the Jets are going to have to find a way to get through that yellow brick wall.
The yellow brick wall. Nice. I like that. Did you coin that yourself?
No.
Okay. Somebody else? Fair enough. Dave, your thoughts on game four?
Well, you know what? I wasn't overly surprised. It was kind of ironic, actually, because before the game, Coach Maurice, I believe, was asked, you know, what are the odds that you guys end up playing a 2-1 game as opposed to the games that we've seen so far in this series? And he goes, oh, well, it's all dependent on X, Y, and Z. But, you know, in fact, it ended up happening that way. To me, that was a game Nashville had to play. Like, they had to play a tighter game. They were just a little too loose. They were giving up too many chances. And, you know, with the Jets' offense, the way it's composed, it's just going to burn you if you allow them to continue to get chance after chance after chance. And again, like I said, from my perspective, games can change on the little flip on a switch. If Josh Morrissey scores that, mm-hmm. you know, if Pekka Rinne doesn't make the butt end save that, you know, was unbelievable, then it changes the way the game is, you know, configured. So it's these little things. It's not that the Jets didn't have opportunities. It's just, for the most part, I thought Nashville played pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, that's just it. I mean, you mentioned Nashville being desperate, Ezzy. And when you have these two teams that are so evenly matched with one another, is it no surprise that the more desperate team comes out and ends up getting the victory? I mean, these two teams, I mean, like I said, it's a coin flip almost before every game, and it seems like that desperation.
Not just in this series, I think in the other three series as well.
Sure, all the series in the second round, like we talked about.
The second round has been phenomenal.
As we talked about on Wednesday's show, absolutely. The second round has been far better than the first round. But in this series in particular, you have these two teams that are so desperate, so evenly matched. It seems like the desperation factor, which is sort of hard. It's not a tangible thing.
Right.
But it seems like the team that is more desperate is getting that crucial goal when they need it the most. You know, game two, Jets lead the series 1-0. The game goes to overtime. Nashville wins it in double overtime. Now, can you say it's because they were the more desperate team? I mean, you can't quantify that.
No.
But you can certainly say that they were probably the better of the two teams in overtime, and the desperation of not going down 0-2 or the desperation of not going down 3-1 probably factors into the performance that they play when they're that evenly matched.
Right, and you heard a lot of the Predators after the game, whether it was, you know, PK Subban or Scotty Hartnell, who was into the lineup for Kevin Fiala, mm-hmm. they were all talking about how their attention to detail was better. And it really was. I mean, you watch game three, and they were just giving up too much to the Jets. It was far too wide open. And really, I think the series has been far too wide open. And the game that we saw in game four, that's the type of game that Laviolette wants to see. I mean, that's a coach's dream,
sure.
right? You want to see a team clamp down and not allow the team to have very many great scoring chances. And the Jets didn't have very many high danger scoring chances. They just didn't. The Predators kept it to the outside for the most part. And I think that's what we saw more of in game one, to be honest with you. And sure, the Jets won that game, but you know, the Predators, I thought, played a much better defensive game. I thought, again, the third line of Nick Bonino, Colton Sissons and Austin Watson was excellent in game four, and they've been excellent all playoffs long. Obviously, Watson had some health concerns there, but it's not like the Predators dominated the Jets offensively or anything like that. They just were stifling them. The Predators, we know, I mean, they don't have the superstar quality offensive players that the Jets have, and they haven't been getting a lot of offense from their defensemen. I mean, PK Subban's the only defenseman for the Preds that has scored in the series, right?
Mm-hmm.
Roman Josi has five assists back in February against the Jets, but as far as I'm concerned, you know, Josi has been really solid defensively, but he hasn't been a threat every time he's on the ice offensively, right? So, I mean, the Jets played a great game, and yeah, the Predators were desperate, and you know, they played a great game, and give them a lot of credit. And I think, you know, there were some people that were getting a little ahead of themselves here with the Jets up 2-1 in this series. And this Predators team was the President's Trophy winning team. And not only that, they went to the Stanley Cup final last year, and they want to go back this year. I mean, this team is built to go back to the Stanley Cup final and win, right, with acquiring Ryan Hartman and acquiring Kyle Turris. And, You know, I actually don't think that line has been fantastic. Kyle Turris's line, the second line. But, sure. You know, Scott Hartnell, say whatever you want about Scott Hartnell. I'm personally a huge fan, you know, 36, 37 years old. But he came into that game. You know, he goes and, you know, lays a hit on Dustin Byfuglien, and then Buff sits on him. but, I mean, he had an impact in that game. You put the veteran grinder in there, and, you know, it turned out to be the right move. Yannick Weber, also a very smart move to put him into the lineup because, as you know, Drew, Emelin wasn't really good early in this series. So, you know, this is a series that's tied, and we all expected that, right?
Well, and that, to that point, as in, that's kind of the funny thing because, especially because I see it when I'm doing my morning papers for the site, I look at this and I think to myself, like, everybody seems to be getting ahead of themselves. You know, the Jets win game three in the fashion they do, and suddenly that's the game that is a signifier that they're a Stanley Cup champion.
How many people were actually picking the Jets to win in five? Not many.
Nobody, I don't think. I can't think of anybody. But all of a sudden now, you know, it just goes to show you how narratives change, right?
So big game by game.
Well, yeah. But exactly. So that's why I'm saying I just don't know how you can make pronouncements based on how close these two teams are. So I looked at that and I thought to myself, wow, that's a lot of people suggesting that it was an epic win and now they're going to suddenly do this X, Y, and Z. Then suddenly they lose game four and now it goes to the other end of the spectrum. And it's, wow, the Jets lost. They missed such an opportunity, da-da-da-da-da. And I'm thinking to myself, like, guys, this is a series that everybody anticipated would be a long one. So why we're suddenly expecting it to be short, I just don't understand that.
And the Jets are going to have to make some adjustments for Game 5. I mean, they were far too slow through the neutral zone, Drew. But you're not going to start drastically changing the way you play.
You're absolutely right. And hold that thought because I want to come back. I'm going to talk about Game 5, the adjustments the Jets need to make to counter what the Predators threw at them in Game 4 in stifling their speed and stifling their offensive ability and their offensive creativeness. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Jets and the Predators. Our Game 5 preview is up next on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
They're on their feet here at Bell MTS Place. Faceoff win line. He scores! Patrick Laine with 49.6 seconds on the clock. Power play marker for Laine, his third of the playoffs. And the Jets are on the board.
Too little, too late. Patrick Laine's goal from Thursday night made it a 2-1 game with about a minute to go. Jets couldn't quite complete the quote-unquote miraculous comeback. They lose Thursday night 2-1 to the Predators. Game 5 between the Jets and the Preds goes tonight, an 8:30 p.m. puck drop. Coverage all day here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, he's been playing to sold-out shows all week long. You know him from America's Got Talent, Drew Lynch in town. Next week, Mark Forward, a fantastic Canadian comedian. He's in town. And remember, the ICOT pool presented by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Anytime a playoff game goes to overtime, go to Twitter, use hashtag ICOT pool, select the player that's going to score, win prizes to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
A little surprised, Drew, that no one took Dan Girardi.
Yeah, you thought Dan Girardi would be a more popular pick for last night's OT pool?
He's a sniper.
Yeah, he's something all right. I'm not sure he's a sniper, but I couldn't quite believe it that Dan Girardi was standing right in front of the blue paint in Boston, tipping it in for Tampa Bay last night. I'm like, Dan Girardi? What are you doing there? Did
you
get lost along the way?
The old one-handed tip. It was a really nice deflection.
It's, Dan Girardi's certainly a steady veteran. You don't expect much from him on the offensive side of things, but he was certainly huge for the Tampa Bay Lightning last night, and we'll talk about the Lightning and the Bruins and the rest of the playoff series later on in the show. But our focus right now is, of course, on the Jets and the Nashville Predators. Game 5 goes tonight. Gentlemen, we were talking before about Game 4, about how the Predators did such a great job, a masterful job at limiting the Jets' speed, limiting the Jets' creativity with the puck. Now, as the chess match continues, and the Jets have had, 48 hours to look at the video of Game 4, how do the Jets counteract the Predators' strategy from Game 4?
Yeah, and I got to say, first of all, I think the Jets' lack of speed through the neutral zone was obviously a key, but it wasn't everything, and You know, I think Matty Perreault coming back to the lineup is really going to help. What it comes down to, Drew, is the zone entries. I thought, you know, a lot of the time the Jets were being forced to dump the puck in.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Predators would retrieve the puck and get it right out. And
which is something their defense does a fantastic job of.
Right, and it's easier said than done. And what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to use short passing. I mean, you're going to have to find a way to enter that zone cleanly. And, you know, the Jets are one of the fastest teams in the league. It's not like they don't know how to do this. It's not like they're starting from square one. But that's really how you do it. You have to try to generate speed through short passes, and you have to find a way to avoid, you know, Nashville standing up to you at the blue line and forcing you to dump the puck in. And that's what was happening. I mean, every team in the NHL tries to prevent clean zone entries into their zone.
Sure.
I mean, it's not like Nashville was doing that to the Jets and the Jets weren't doing that successfully to Nashville. I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, Nashville's first goal, Ryan Hartman, the Jets can't clear the puck. There's five guys back for the Jets. You know, Ryan Hartman is just in a, you know, a good spot, and he scores the goal. And then, you know, when you're talking about the second goal by Nashville, it's a blast from P.K. Subban. Victor Arvidsson is jumping in front of Connor Hellebuyck.
Which is the third time he's done
right?
that.
Yeah. So it's not like the Jets were, I would say, giving Nashville too much time and space. And we talked about this after game one. You know, there were some analysts that were saying Nashville's defense is overrated, right? Who's mm-hmm. saying that now? Nobody's saying that now, Drew.
Well, the narrative changes, you know, as Dave said in the first segment.
Well, the narrative changes to suit what you want your narrative to be, right?
Yeah, or it changes to suit what you saw in one game. They're making, you know, grand proclamations after 60 minutes of hockey, ignoring, say, 82 games of evidence before that.
Right, and I mean, we've seen how the Jets use their speed to enter the zone, whether that's Nikolaj Ehlers, Dave, whether that's, you know, Blake Wheeler, whether that's Paul Stastny, I mean, Jacob Trouba or Dustin Byfuglien from the back end. I mean, we know that the Jets aren't a team that has any trouble entering the zone and making plays happen, but, you know, it's clear that Nashville has seen something in the Jets game, and they're going to have to make those adjustments. And, you know, you often see, you know, one of the forwards on the half wall, and, you know, you pass it in the little give and go, and maybe that helps you enter the zone there. But, I mean, it's clear that the Jets need to get back to their speed game. They didn't look as fast as they did in either Game 3 or Game 2 or Game 1, for that matter, when that was a little bit more of a chess match. So I'm not worried about that. I think they will get their chances, and I think, you know, at times maybe they were a little bit too passive in the neutral zone, and they've got to be a little bit more quicker and decisive, but this is a fast team, and Perreault's going to help. I'm not worried that we're going to see necessarily an exact carbon copy of Game 4 in Game 5, but, I mean, Nashville's a great team. They're a great defensive team. You know, you're going to have to find a way to be quicker through the neutral zone.
Dave, if the Jets have to, if Nashville continues to line up three or four guys at their defensive blue line, and the Jets, you know, have to play a chip-and-chase game, is that something that they can succeed at? I mean, it's obviously probably not ideal. You obviously want to enter the offensive zone with puck possession.
Now, Drew, I wanted to throw in, too. I mean, Nashville's not a slow team.
No, certainly right? not.
So it's not like Nashville's slowing them down and they're a slow team.
No.
I mean, Nashville's a great team, too, with a lot of great skaters.
Can the Jets succeed if they have to play chip and chase? If Nashville forces their hand again and says to the Jets, we're going to do everything in our power to prevent you from getting a clean zone entry, you're going to have to chip it past us and go chase it. Is that something the Jets can succeed at or excel at, given what you've seen?
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, like Brian Little, after the maybe it was yesterday or after the game, he's describing the way the neutral zone felt. He said it was like going into a wall. He said that's how Nashville lined up and the way they were playing it to prevent really the Jets from gaining any speed into the Nashville zone. And to me, the interesting comment also was from Blake Wheeler, who talked about how they were a little bit stubborn, how they wouldn't change things up slightly to adjust properly.
The Jets were a little stubborn.
The Jets, yeah, of course. So in order to be able to adjust to make those changes to offset what Nashville is doing. So to me, if that's the way, like obviously the Jets have a certain manner in which they like to play, and you don't want to make radical changes what's been a successful formula for you. But at the same time, if it's not working, mm-hmm. then you have to adjust because it's evolve or die, right? So
sure.
So for me, you maybe don't necessarily change up your formula right away. You see how it works throughout the game. If Nashville goes back to that same game plan, completely stifling you through the neutral zone and it's not working, then maybe you have to do that, Drew. But again, it was one game. We haven't necessarily seen it throughout the other three. So, you know, the previous three, I should say. So from my perspective, I mean, the Jets have the speed that they should be able to retrieve pucks. But the problem is, as he just said, Nashville's defense is very good and they're very fast. So the guy, it's very hard to chip that puck in and retrieve it when A, you've got a wall to get through, and B, you've got a defense that's equal to the task.
Yeah, and it, guys, if you're having trouble generating offense off of the transition, off of those kind of more set transition plays, I mean, then you're going to have to rely a little bit on the cycle. But the other thing, too, is Nashville's got a great group of defensive forwards. You always hear about back pressure, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we talked about the Bonino-Sissons-Watson line. When they were matched up against Scheifele, I mean, that's a tight checking line. You know, the tourists, Craig Smith and, you know, Scott Hartnell's on that line now, but Kevin Fiala was on that line too. That's another good defensive line. The top offensive line for the Preds, Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, Victor Arvidsson, that's also a very good defensive line. I mean, they come back in groups of five, and they do a great job of back pressuring, and the Jets are going to have to find ways to create offense in the Nashville zone, have a little bit more zone time. But if you look at the zone time in game four, it was very equal. I mean, it's not like Nashville's possession numbers were way better than the Jets' numbers in game four. The Jets were just not able to sustain a lot of pressure. So for me, I think you got to spend more time in the Nashville zone. Chip it in and you know, work that cycle game. We obviously know Adam Lowry's line can play that cycle game, but we know that Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, and Kyle Connor can play that cycle game as well. So I think you got to spend more time in the Nashville zone, get a little bit dirty, and try to create something off the cycle.
It's obviously important, you know, every game you play, that being the first goal of the game. But given how Nashville was able to shut the game down by taking when they took an early lead in game four, how much more important does the first goal in tonight's game become?
Well, it's huge. Huge. The last two games, Nashville has scored the first goal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's something that the Jets have done really well at all year. And I think especially on the road and especially in a pressure-packed game five, the first goal is key. Just because the Jets score the first goal doesn't guarantee they're going to win.
Right.
But I think it goes a long way because then now you're playing with the lead. You're not chasing the game. You're not chasing the game on the road, knowing that if you go back to Winnipeg down 3-2, your chances of winning the series are not very good, right?
Yeah.
Sure, the Jets can win two games in a row, and they were actually a very good road team this year, but we know Nashville was the best road team. So, I mean, scoring first is absolutely going to be key, Drew, because you always want to take the crowd out of it.
Take the crowd out of it and maybe get Nashville away from the game that was so successful for them in game four.
You want to take Nashville out of it.
Well, sure. If they have to open things up a little bit more than they necessarily would if they take a 1-0 or a 2-0 lead like they did in game four, Dave.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's the critical aspect for the Jets, especially with a younger team and a less experienced team. You know, experience doesn't have such a huge impact anymore because the Jets are gaining more and more of it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the most pressure this team will ever have faced to date. So to me, this is a critical start. You can't afford to be slow.
And Dave, if you're, you know, Paul Maurice, Jamie Compan, Charlie Huddy, the coaching staff, you're obviously talking about how to get through that, what we've been calling the yellow brick wall, and how great Nashville has been playing at their own blue line. But they also want to do the exact same thing that Nashville did to them in their home arena. That's what they want to do. I mean,
sure,
they want to keep this game low scoring. I mean, the Jets, if you go, you know, back and forth and you open it up, I mean, the Jets can beat you. They're a dangerous team. So I think if you're the Jets, you don't want it to be that type of game because I think you want it to be low scoring. You want to score early, and then you want to protect that lead. We'll see what happens. I mean, we've seen a lot of high-scoring games between these two teams, but I don't necessarily think you're going to see a 7-4, 6-5 game tonight.
Oh, how much solace can people take, Dave, in the fact that really aside from maybe, you know, 40 minutes of game three, the Jets haven't played what I would describe as their best hockey, and they haven't played as well as we know that they can play and have seen them play both in these playoffs and during the regular season. I mean, it's a 2-2 series.
Game two was the Jets' best game.
A game that they happened to lose.
But I thought that was their best game.
I don't disagree with you necessarily. I think they played well in game two. It was a back and forth game, and they were able to, you know, take the lead and come back with the late goal by Mark Scheifele, of course. But, you know, I think for fans or even just interested observers that say, you know, wow, this has been a great series, I don't think we've seen, you know, necessarily the Jets at their best, whereas I think we saw Nashville at least at their best defensive side of their game in game four on Thursday night.
Well, obviously, you know, Dave, the second period of game three, I mean, the Jets explode for four unanswered goals, right? That was, you know, their best period offensively. But yeah, Drew, if you want to look at, you know, the four games, you know, in their totality, I think game two was, from start to finish, their best game, even though they lost, but they could have easily won that game, right? And you just mentioned it, so yeah, maybe we haven't seen the best of the Jets, and you know, I think that has to be a credit to Nashville, right? I mean, You look at this series, and what did we say going into the series? Nashville's top four was better than the Jets' top four, mm-hmm. which I believe it is.
Yeah.
That's not to take anything away from the Jets' top four. And we said the Jets' top six is better than Nashville's top six. And then the goaltending was a wash with an advantage to Hellebuck.
At least early in the series.
We all gave an advantage to Hellebuck. And Hellebuck, in my opinion, has played better than Rinne. And the top six of the Jets has played better than Nashville's top six. So what we expected to happen is happening. And it's an even series. It's tied, and it's anybody's series right now. Anybody who thinks Nashville has an advantage on the Jets, I think, is ridiculous.
We'll find out in about, little less than 11 hours from now will be puck drop. Pardon me, a little more than 11 hours from now will be puck drop in Nashville. When we come back, we head to Music City, USA. Ted Wyman is there for the Winnipeg Sun. Ted joins us next for more on the Jets and the Predators. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Trying to get a hold of Ted Wyman down in Nashville to join us to talk about Game 5 between the Jets and the Preds. Looks like Teddy had a little bit too much of a good time at the Foo Fighters last night at Bridgestone Arena. We'll try and get him on, though, this segment to join us.
What a concert to go to. Yeah. I've always wanted to see the Foo Fighters, one of my favorite bands.
I'm surprised you haven't seen them. I've even seen them, and I'm not a music guy by any stretch. You haven't seen them when they've been to Winnipeg before?
I don't think they've been here for a while.
They were here, I mean, maybe it was the last time they were here. I don't know. It would have been about 7 or 8 years ago. But I went to them, then.
We got to expect that Ted was having a bit of a late night because it's the Foo Fighters, man.
It's Foo Fighters.
You don't go to bed right after a concert like that.
It's Nashville. I don't think you go to bed early anytime you're in Nashville with Broadway being right there and the good times had on Broadway in Nashville. Anyways, we're hoping that Ted will join us in the next few minutes to talk about Game 5 between the Nashville Predators and the Winnipeg Jets. What about the lineup changes for the Winnipeg Jets ahead of Game 5? You know, we heard about Matthew Perreault and there was sort of expectation after Game 4. You know, at least the after Wednesday's skate where Perreault was wearing a normal jersey and sort of declared himself healthy and ready that he'd be back in the lineup. Instead, he wasn't. Joel Armia was back in. You know, and Paul Maurice sort of came out and said, he's close, but he's not that close. I'm not going to put two guys back in the lineup that have injury concerns, given that he wasn't comfortable putting both Perreault and Armia back in the lineup the same game, both of them coming off injuries. Your thoughts on that concept, that idea, Dave?
Well, you know what? It's interesting because he had kind of previewed this for us, if you were listening to his audio before the game, where he indicated that, it didn't sound like he wanted to make too many lineup changes at once. So from my perspective, I wasn't overly surprised. I was surprised that it was Armia over Perreault because, we don't have any insight because the cone of silence exists during playoffs with respect to injuries. So really, it's anyone's guess as to how far along player X is. But, I was thinking that it was more likely that Perreault was ahead of Armia. Turns out that Armia wouldn't exactly divulge what it was. He said the Bufflin shot hit him in the wrist, but he said it wasn't the wrist injury that kept him out. You never know if guys are lying or not lying during the playoffs, so take that with a grain of salt. But, I was a little surprised because I think, even Matthew Perreault, the only thing I can think of that would justify not putting Matthew Perreault in the lineup is that you're worried about reoccurrence. And so, but which to me would be odd because if a player declares himself to be ready, you'd think he's saying he's ready. Now, the counter to that, of course, is that players will play with an arm ready to fall off. So, as a coach, you have to be very careful because you just can't afford, if you think that your team is built to make it to the Stanley Cup Finals and win the Stanley Cup, you can't afford to throw Matthew Perreault back in a little bit early with the chance of him re-injuring whatever it is that's bothering him. So to me, unless the doctors have said it's 100% and you're not doing it, then it becomes a bit of a questionable decision because to me, Matt Hendricks versus Matthew Perreault, we're not even really having that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So from my perspective, the only thing I can think of that would justify not putting Matthew Perreault in the lineup would simply be that he wasn't 100% based on what the doctors told Maurice.
Yeah, and I think you might be right, Dave, but I think it comes down to simply Paul Maurice decided to not put him in the lineup because Matthew Perreault, as you mentioned yesterday, said, I was ready to go. I was ready to play in Game 4, and Paul Maurice decides to use Joel Armia. So whatever reason Paul Maurice had for not playing Matthew Perreault, he decided to not put him in the lineup. I think we would all be shocked if Matty Perreault doesn't play tonight, though. I mean, Perreault should be going into the lineup tonight for Matt Hendricks, and I think it's going to be interesting to see, Dave, what happens with that fourth line, right? Because the fourth line, you know, do you put Matty Perreault on the fourth line and then you move the TLC line back together? Like, because Andrew Kopp is playing center right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would think you would just put Kopp with Tanev and Lowry, and then Perreault with Little and Armia. But, I mean, right. you know, the reality
is... That's a pretty darn good fourth line. That's the fourth line that we've kind of been waiting for, whether you want to call it a fourth line or third line. I mean, that's a really solid scoring line. It causes
matchup problems for the Nashville Predators, or at least it should.
And right off the bat, all the people that are blaming Matt Hendricks and complaining about Matt Hendricks being in the lineup, I don't care if Matty Perreault is in the lineup. They don't win that game. Nashville plays that game. It doesn't matter who's in the lineup. So, yes, Perreault should be in the lineup tonight. But again, it wasn't because Matt Hendricks was in the lineup that the Jets lost. Well, That's ridiculous.
What are your thoughts about the decision to go with to move Roslovic out of the lineup when Armia returned and keep Matt Hendricks in the lineup? No, I agree with you, Ezzy. I don't think Matt Hendricks caused the defeat.
When Ryan Hartman scored and Matt Hendricks was on the ice,
yeah.
Were there not four other players on the ice for the Jets?
Look, I don't think Matt Hendricks was I don't think you can make the correlation that Matt Hendricks' presence is why the Jets lost the game.
Exactly.
But you know, I was a little surprised that Paul Maurice would go with Hendricks over Roslovic, and that
I was as well. I'm not saying that. I mean, but let's not make him the scapegoat.
No, he's certainly not. Look, they lost a 2-1 game. It's not like it was...
I thought Armia and Perreault were both going in for Game 4, to be honest with you.
So did I. And so, you know, that's the part that I understand. I mean, I listened to Maurice's rationale, and I guess I understand it, that you don't all of a sudden want to put two guys who aren't 100% back in your lineup, and then maybe you lose both of them middle of the game. But I found a little curious that to go with the decision to put Armia back in and to take Roslovic out, you know, I can't imagine that we're going to see Matt Hendricks again tonight, unless Matthew Perreault suffers some setback during the pregame skate or something.
The problem with Matt Hendricks, though, is that this is a Jets team that's built on speed.
And he's not fast.
And he's not fast. So, yeah. And it's built on a number of things that to me, I don't know that he necessarily brings for the squad. So you have a player like Roslovic, and sure, he's light on experience, but I mean, in terms of his ability to see plays develop, to get back, you know, to be able to set up plays in the offensive zone, like, to me, a Roslovic is a guy you want in your lineup personally. But that to me is curious. I just don't understand it. But, you know, we're not the coach, so we can critique the moves, but we don't necessarily make the moves.
No, we certainly don't. I just thought it was a little bit of a questionable one, a little bit of an odd one. Some people saying that maybe Joe Morrow should go in for Ben Chiarot for Game 5. You gave up two goals. I mean, Chiarot was, average, I would say, in the game. I just don't see the Jets all of a sudden making that move to take Chiarot out and bring Morrow in at this point. But, I mean, stranger things certainly have happened.
I think there's an argument to be made. I like Ben Chiarot's game, but he struggled. I mean, Ben Chiarot and Tyler Myers, I think, have struggled at times in the series. They haven't been awful in the series, but I didn't think they were good in Game 4. And, you know, you look at what Peter Laviolette did, putting in Yannick Weber for Alexei Emelin. I mean, we know that the Predators have a lot of depth. I realize, you know, a lot of the talk was about how, you know, could the Jets take advantage of, you know, Matt Irwin and Alexei Emelin. And sure, they're not the fastest players, but I actually think that's a pretty good third pairing, if you ask me. And Ben Chiarot, I think, you know, I wouldn't expect Joe Morrow to go in, but you could make an argument for it. And what I mean by that is, I mean, Joe Morrow's got some wheels. Morrow can skate, and he's got an offensive touch. I would say he's better offensively than Chiarot. What are you giving up when you take Chiarot out of the lineup? You're giving up some physicality. I think that, you know, Morrow's impressed me. I mean, when Morrow came over at the trade deadline from Montreal, I wasn't really sure if the Jets were even going to really use him that much.
Sure.
I thought he's your 7th, 8th defenseman. Maybe he gets into a few games, but once the playoffs come around, you know, maybe you don't really use him that much. But with Dmitry Kulikov out of the lineup, I mean, the Jets could really use Kulikov, in my opinion. I mean, he can move the puck really well. He's a good defenseman. But he's not coming back tonight. He's skating in a regular jersey right now, but the point is...
Yeah, he hasn't played in 6-7
right,
weeks.
Your options are put Kulikov in, who hasn't played at all in the playoffs, or put in Morrow, who hasn't played in the second round.
Is that the kind of move, Dave, you make more so if you can get last change and you can get matchups in your favor? I'd be.
You're talking about Morrow specifically.
I'm talking about Morrow in for Sherratt. If you like that matchup, if you like, you know, that pairing, is that something you want to? And it certainly has some drawbacks to that pairing. I mean, you know, you could say that, you know, Morrow certainly isn't physical, where that's what Sherratt brings to the table. Is that the kind of move you make? You know, maybe when you're on home ice and you would have, you know, you get the last change, so you can sort of dictate when that pairing is out on the ice together.
I would say normally yes, but the issue is that Maurice seems to have said that he's not really worrying too much about matchups right now, and it's somewhat throwing it to the wolves. So to me, if you're not worrying about the matchups, does that become as big a concern? Probably not, because you're basically admitting that you're not as focused on that as you may be normally, especially with how even the series is. One player who probably merits mention is Tobias Enstrom, who was, you know, rather pilloried for his play before, but he was pretty good last game, and, you know, he covered for Dustin Buff. I mean, just goes to show you how comfortable those two players are, because there were two instances that I can think of where there were two-on-ones because Bufflin made a play, you know, a pinch here, a pinch there, that Enstrom happened to play back on and was perfectly positioned and played it perfect. You know, and so Tobias Enstrom's a player who, like, again, people seem to love to hate, but, you know, he looked pretty good to me in that last game.
They love to hate him because his contributions usually don't show up on the score sheet at any point in time. You know, his weaknesses do, and his glaring mistakes show up a lot more obvious.
He doesn't make too many glaring mistakes in my mind, to be honest with you. Like, again, like I said, even if you want to go back all the way to the goal that
game two.
Yeah. Like, again, Enstrom played it. He didn't play it poorly. Like, he thought he had coverage, and again, that to me was like a five-man unit mistake, not a Tobias Enstrom mistake. So I'm just saying, like, I think the defense has been pretty good. I don't know that I would be making it's a 2-1 game. And as he's talked about in the previous segment, there's no wait. Did I just paralyze you? Are there multiple Ezras in the building? But no, I just don't think you need to make radical changes personally, because I think that the team played overall pretty well. So, I mean, a 2-1 game, really, either team could have won. We've detailed that throughout the first couple segments that, you know, there were instances where the Jets could have scored. So, I probably wouldn't make too many radical changes.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. The Jets will probably skate, I believe, at around 12 noon Central Time today. So keep it to IllegalCurve.com and our Twitter feed, at IllegalCurve, for all the latest news and information coming out of the Jets game day skate. It'll be a later skate than normal because the start time is that 8:30 start time. We'll try and get a hold of Ted Wyman again. We'll see if we can get him on. If not, much more on the Jets and the Predators series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
like, you could have played last night, and did they hold you out as a precaution?
I feel like I could have played, yes, but it's not my call, obviously, so it comes down to coach's decision. So you know, I let them know I felt good, I wanted to play, and there's nothing else I can do.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. That's a long time. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to catch the game, it's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. They got the big screen TVs. They got great food and drink specials. Full audio. Check it out. Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernsteinsdeli.com. Do the Jets need more from Kyle Connor and Nikolai Ehlers?
Yes.
Good talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You know what? I actually think Kyle Connor and Nikolai Ehlers have been really good, not only in this series, but in the playoffs. And, you know, Ehlers doesn't have a goal right now. Right?
Right. Yes,
right.
Correct.
Neither does Connor.
And that really surprises me. I don't think game four was necessarily his best game, but Ehlers has generated offense in this series. He just hasn't finished, and he is going to score eventually. It's going to happen. It could happen as early as tonight, obviously, right? But a lot of criticism for the two young players for the Jets, obviously, you know, Ehlers and Connor. I mean, I think they've done a great job. I would like to see Connor back on that top line with Scheifele and Wheeler, because that's where he's been the most successful all year.
So you think that they should go back to that? You think you should go back to the usual lines and put Ehlers back with his buddy Laine with Stasny in between them?
I do, and I think you saw a lot of movement, and then you saw Scheifele between Laine and Ehlers. I think you go back to that top line that has been so successful all year.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Straight from Nashville, Tennessee, we're pleased to welcome back to the program Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press. Jason, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
We're very happy to have you on. Join us this morning, Jason.
Jason, did you go to the Foo Fighters last night?
Teddy was at the Foo Fighters. I was out with a couple other guys doing the Food Fighters.
Oh, where did we go?
Too many late night ribs. Feeling it a bit this morning, but I appreciate you guys having me on.
No Nashville hot chicken? I would have thought that would have been the option.
No, I was very thrilled to have the barbecued ribs earlier in the afternoon, and then again, I'm embarrassed to say I had it late. Well,
any man eating ribs twice in one day is a man after our own heart. That's I think the motto of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show right there.
My wife is not listening right now.
Jason, obviously a massive game five tonight. The Jets coming into Nashville after losing 2-1 on Thursday night. All the talk after game four was how Nashville was able to stifle the Jets' creativity, stifle the Jets' speed through the neutral zone. How do you think the Jets bounce back? What do you think the chess match, the next move in this chess match is for the Jets to recapture some of the offensive flair that they were lacking in game four?
Well, I was in transit yesterday, so I wasn't around hearing exactly what the Jets had to say. I was involved in listening to, of course, on your station, listening to some of the audio and reading some of the quotes and in other places. But I talked to all the gentlemen after the game on what day was this again? I was talking about it was on Thursday.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a great amount of panic from the Jets. It was kind of one of these, they kind of bottled us up, and we did do the right thing. We did get our speed going, but there wasn't a whole lot of angst afterwards. And I don't think there should be a whole lot of angst for the Winnipeg Jets or their fans. I mean, they're going into a hostile environment, but they have had some success in this building. It hasn't been that den of doom that many might think. And Jets have been a pretty good road team. A couple of points there. I didn't like the way the Jets still worked along. I think where you see the line A, Connor, Ehlers, sort of weaknesses in their game, and it's all about youth and experience. I didn't think their body position was very good. I didn't think they won very many battles. The zone entries were not good, and that was that 1-3-1 that the Predators were using, and it was, once they got up a goal, they shut her down pretty quickly. So, if there was ever a time for the Jets to score first, this would be the time. You want to combat the way that the Predators can play defense, score first and let them chase. And that's obviously easier said than done, but that the Winnipeg Jets are going to create some chances. So if they can capitalize early, get the lead, have the Preds kind of come at them. We know that last changes haven't meant a whole lot in this series. I don't think they have to worry. You got to get their speed going again. And I don't just mean flying through the neutral zone. I mean quickness on pucks. I thought their retrievals, both in their own end, particularly in the offensive end, were not good. Other than I thought the Brian Little line, I guess it's the Adam Lowry line. I thought they were probably the best trio of the night, and that's because they were a little harder on pucks than the others. I thought the Jets' passing was terrible. I thought that they were doing a lot of east-west stuff that doesn't work against the Nashville Predators. Adam Lowry line is the best line in the case. And as Paul Maurice suggests, they played north-south. They moved forward. And you don't see a lot of that out of Kyle Connors. You got the dipsy doodling, cross-ice stuff. It just doesn't work. So you've got to go short passes, move the puck forward. And if you have to chip it in and win battles, do it. And the Jets have proven they can do that. I don't think there's got to be a whole lot of panic. I don't think the other day was a sign of, Predators have the answer and the Jets, can never sort of neutralize that answer. I think the Jets have a good opportunity tonight to steal one here and go back home and maybe win a series.
Jay, all signs right now are pointing towards Matty Perreault coming back into the lineup for tonight's Game 5. If Perreault does come back into the lineup, do you expect him to slot in on that fourth line, and then Andrew Copp moves up to the third line, and then you have, the reuniting of the TLC line with Tanev and Lowry, and then that fourth line becomes Brian Little between Matty Perreault and Joel Armia? And what kind of impact do you think Perreault can have? He hasn't played since early on in Round 1.
That's actually exactly how, in my mind, I have it. But, I'm not Paul Maurice and don't profess to be even a millionth as smart as that guy when it comes to hockey decisions. But that's sort of how I would envision it. And then, of course, your third, you know, you have a 3A and 3B, I guess you could say. You know, Matty Perreault has not been an effective offensive player much, you know, for a couple of months now. And that's not a knock on any diminishing skills. I mean, I think he's had some poor luck. I think we know he's battled some health issues that some are disclosed, some are not disclosed. And, but he's had some tough puck luck. There's no question. But what he does bring is energy. And I think that, you know, he hasn't been up to game speed. We know that. That's probably why he didn't play the other night. But at some point, you've got to test this guy and see how he performs. And they don't really have, you know, it's not like it's not a big risk or a big gamble at this point, because you're going to take 15 out of the lineup, Matt Hendricks, and you're going to insert 85. And so, you know, you're getting an offensive upswing, potential for offensive upswing there. You've got a guy that, you know, is known for getting down and dirty as far as, I don't mean pushing and shoving and being super physical, but I mean just getting on pucks quick. And he's certainly a whole lot faster than Matt Hendricks. So I think it's a great time for Matt Perreault to enter the lineup and potentially spark a bit more offense on a team that has shown, you know, at times that they can really spread the scoring around, but certainly not in these playoffs. When we talk about, you know, Nikolaj Ehlers and Kyle Connor having nothing to this point.
You know, Jay, one thing we've seen from this Jets team is responding to adversity and, you know, losing that game with the potential to take a stranglehold on the series. You know, prior to the loss, everybody was talking about how the Jets were the Stanley Cup favorites. They lose, and now it's like, well, the series is over. I think we've just seen how tight things can be. But do you see this team responding to adversity the way they have throughout the regular season?
Well, certainly. I mean, you know, just look no further than, you know, what they did in Minnesota. I mean, you know, they won that big game in Minnesota, and you just kind of sense that the Wild were done at that point, and game five was almost a mere formality. The Jets respond from a terrible effort in three, win in Minnesota, and then come home and close out the series. The Jets did it again the other night. I mean, game three was not particularly wonderful. And then, game two was not particularly wonderful in Nashville. And then they come home and they slow start, but they turned it on. So there's some, you know, they are able to fight through adversity just in their own building in a stretch of 60 minutes. So they don't lose very many games in a row. And you know, you talk about their goaltender is a prime example of a guy that Connor Hellebuck is a guy that doesn't string too many bad efforts together, and not to say he had one the other night, but I just mean he's a prime example of a club that doesn't get too down for these long stretches. They've shown that they can rebound pretty nicely, and if there was ever a time to do it, it would be at Bridgestone tonight.
Jason, we'll let you go on this last question. We appreciate you joining us on this morning. The Predators' power play has been quite effective, especially in the last three games. How much of a concern do you think that is for Paul Maurice and for the Jets? And do you see them trying to do anything different to shut down, especially PK Subban and his shot from the point?
Well, and of course, they've set up a PK unit that is centered around allowing shots from the perimeter. The only problem is in this series, some of those shots are sneaking in. And you know, I think that the key to that is clearing the front. I mean, PK is going to get that shot away, and as long as Connor Hellebuck sees it, he's probably going to stop it. And I don't really fault him for allowing that goal. He got a piece of it the other day, but how much did he really see of it? I mean, when you got the human jumping bean and Victor Arvidsson jumping around in front, I mean, and of course, you've got to play very close to the line, and you certainly don't want to go down 5-on-3, but if Victor Arvidsson is going to jump in front of your goaltender, why is one of your defensemen not, you know, politely moving him out of the way when he's you know, halfway in the air or whatever? I mean, you've got to clear the front. If you want to invite those shots from the point, then you've got to make sure that your goaltender can see them. Other than that, I don't see they're going to do a wholesale alteration of how they kill penalties, because it's been pretty effective. They want those shots from the perimeter. And PK has got a blast, but there's lots of guys around the National Hockey League that have good, hard shots that the Jets have, again, welcomed those shots from there, because Connor Hellebuck, they have great confidence, and he's going to see those pucks. So clear out the front, make sure that he can see them. And that's really, I mean, you know, that's got to be the key, because they aren't going to make major changes to that PK. They've got the personnel, so it's a matter of making sure Connor can see the puck.
Jason Bell is covering the Jets and the Predators for the Winnipeg Free Press. He joins us this morning from Nashville.
Jason, you going to Tootsie's for lunch? Or?
Or more ribs.
No, I'm not sure how my day is going to unfold today. We've got to get to, in all honesty, we've got to get to the rink pretty soon because both clubs skate, and then I believe I've got some radio obligations for your organization later on, and then of course the late start. It's a bit of a weird day, as you can appreciate. But I will try on your behalf to get to Broadway.
We appreciate your efforts. Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us to talk about the Jets and the Preds. Jason, thanks so much for doing this. You know, it should be a dandy tonight in Nashville.
Yeah, and you enjoy your Saturday, guys.
Take care, Jason. When we come back, Dave McCarthy of NHL.com is going to join us, talk more about the Jets and the Predators series, look around the NHL at the Stanley Cup playoffs in its entirety.
Dave wants to talk about licking as well.
And apparently we have to talk about...
The other Dave.
Not Dave Minuk, Dave McCarthy.
That's right.
Wants to talk about licking because that's now a thing we talk about on a hockey show. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Dave McCarthy of NHL.com set to join us here momentarily, talk about the Jets and the Preds series and the Stanley Cup playoffs in general. And, of course, we'll touch on more Brad Marchand antics last night for the Bruins as he decided to, yet again, lick another player, this time Ryan Callahan. We'll talk about that with Dave and talk about that throughout the remainder of the program, especially when we focus on that series.
Yeah, the third hour is actually going to be the licking hour.
The licking hour.
Yeah.
You know, you've heard of the witching hour?
We're going to bring some popsicles in here and just all have a lick.
It's lick off 2018 here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Is that what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Okay, that'll be honest to God. If you get licked, and I know, you know, if you get licked, somebody licks you, aren't you grabbing their tongue out of their mouth and trying to rip it out of their mouth in response?
And how does the NHL deal with this? Because the Department of Player Safety can't deal with this. It has to be the Department of Player Licking, I guess.
I think you're in an.
It's pretty creepy.
It's
one thing, you know, for a player to get into another player's face. But for Brad Marchand to lick Callahan like that, that's not cool.
It's actually past creepy though. It's a health risk. I mean, the reality is you can transmit disease that way. It's bizarre. It's very unusual.
Well, you know what the interesting part is? So when he licked the opponent in the first round,
wasn't it Komarov?
Yeah, he licked Leo Komarov in the first round when the Bruins and the Leafs played. After that, Elliot Friedman reported that the NHL called the Bruins and said. And said to the Bruins, tell Marchand to stop licking people.
Which they denied.
Which Marchand denied.
And the Bruins, I believe.
I don't know if the Bruins ever denied it, but I know Marchand himself denied it. So if the NHL didn't actually call, and who knows what the truth is there, and now they're only calling after the second licking incident, again, words that I did not expect to ever say on this program, it makes you wonder what the hell were they doing after the first licking incident?
Well, yeah, I mean, it makes absolutely zero sense that they wouldn't have made the phone call. Like, it's funny that Brad Marchand's like, they never did. Well, why didn't they? If they didn't do it, absolutely should have, because it has no place in the game. And again, to your point, I have no problem with a guy getting another guy's face and, like, nose to nose, and we know Brad Marchand has a nose. So the reality is, like, there's no problem with that. But to sit there and allow a player to do it once should have been like, hey, I'm with you, Drew. You should never have to have cut that off.
Yeah.
But the reality is, it's embarrassing for the NHL that if you did that, see that happen, and you didn't cut it off, and then you're like, oh, well, now we're going to do it because it happened a second time. Dummies, it happened once. That was one time too many.
The first time he licks Komarov, maybe you don't suspend him, but you fine him whatever the maximum amount is, and then you say in response, if you lick another player, you're going to be suspended.
$5,000 for a lick.
Fine. But then you say you're going to be suspended. And then if he does it again, now what are you going to do? You can't, I mean, are you going to suspend him for the, you know, for the first warning? I mean, it's such a bizarre situation that it's a shame it's taking away from the hockey.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
There we go. We get the right phone number. We get him on the line. Dave McCarthy of NHL.com joins us on the program. Dave, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, boys, and to be quite honest with you, things that I never thought I would be told before a radio interview, get ready to talk about licking.
We're going to get to that, but here in Winnipeg, it's I mean, as much of that as that is a sideshow everywhere, it's really a sideshow here because we're focused on the Jets and the Predators. So let's talk about the Jets and the Preds to begin with, and then we'll get into Lickgate 2018. You know, Game five tonight between the Jets and the Predators. It was a best of seven series, then it was a best of five series, and now it's a best of three series. And Dave, from your opinion being out there in Toronto, is this the way the series should be going? Two tremendous teams, two evenly matched teams, now doing battle in a best of three to determine who's going to the conference finals?
Well, you guys are absolutely right. You guys can afford to make the licking a sideshow when you have things to focus on, like your team still in the playoffs. So that is a nice thing, and I do agree with you. I projected this series to be a lengthy one. To me, this is a Western Conference final type matchup, if not a Stanley Cup final matchup, with two teams that I think, by and large, for the most part, everybody in hockey considers to be, you know, two of the top teams in the league. So I figured this series was going to go long. It's really playing out the way I expected it to. I expected it to be 2-2 at some point. I expected it to be a best of three from game five onward. I didn't think, you know, any team was going to get out to a 2-0 or a 3-1 series lead just because these two teams are so evenly matched up front, on the back end, in goal. It's really difficult to highlight and to pinpoint serious differences between these two teams in any of those three facets. So the series is projecting the way I thought it was going to be, and so far it's been everything that I've expected and that I think we've all expected. And it's nice to see that when a highly anticipated series really seems to live up to its billing.
Dave, early on in the series, everyone was talking about how dominant Dustin Byfuglien was, and rightfully so. He's been excellent, not just in this round, but in the previous round against the Wild. But do you think enough people around the hockey world are talking about how good of a series and how good of a playoffs PK Subban is having?
Probably not. For whatever reason, Dustin Byfuglien seems to command the attention, maybe just by virtue of the fact that he plays maybe a little bit more physically than PK does, and you'll see him on those highlight reels where he's delivering a bone crushing check in a legal fashion, which is something that has come into question over these playoffs on multiple different players. Dustin seems to be able to do it in legal fashion. There was the one in the Minnesota series behind the net. He's just a guy that can really impact the game physically, and I think that makes him stand out, and he carries this reputation where the guy's built like a brick house, and you wouldn't want to go into the corner against this guy. PK's maybe sort of built a little bit more around speed and skill, and rightly or wrongly, maybe the guy who plays a little bit more physically commands a little bit more attention. But PK has had a tremendous series, big goal the other night, and really he's been good from the start of the regular season to this point. So I think he deserves a lot of credit. It's difficult when you're in Nashville just because their blue line is so good. It can kind of undersell the impact that PK can have because, in other words, it kind of splits the vote when you've got a guy like Josi and you've got a guy like Ekholm and you've got a guy like Ellis. Kind of deflects the attention from just one guy. But PK has been that good, and he showed it the other night. And I think you guys are right. He deserves a lot of credit for how well he's played. He's impacted the series.
You know, Dave, we're going to get to some licking now because the first incident took place in the Toronto series. And you know, depending on who you listen to, there was a warning from the NHL. There wasn't a warning from the NHL. I mean, how there wasn't a warning from the NHL is if there wasn't, makes no sense. But now we have a second licking incident. First of all, what are your thoughts on Brad Marchand doing the licking in the first place? And secondly, what do you think the penalty has to be from the NHL?
Well, I'll correct you guys to an extent, no fault of your own. You don't follow the Leafs as closely as I do. That's not the first time that Brad Marchand licked somebody in the Toronto series. He did it to Leo Komarov back in November when these two teams played. And he was asked about it again prior to the series, and Leo Komarov was like, oh, I don't need this, guys. I'm married. Like, look, I don't need to deal with this. So he looked exasperated before it even occurred in the Leaf series, and then it happened again. And then we were all like, what is even happening right now? Like, why are you doing that? And now again with Ryan Callahan. And as you guys said, depending on who you listen to, Marshawn was warned by the league. Then there was the situation before, I think, this series started, when the news came out that he was warned initially. Brad Marchand was going around responding on Twitter to outlets like the Boston Globe, calling the report fake news. So I don't know who to believe anymore. Point is, it's time for the league to step in and curtail this and put an end to it, because there's just no place in the game for this. I can't believe we're discussing this. It's explicitly written into the rules that if you spit at a guy, you're subject to suspension. So by depositing saliva via a spit is illegal, but directly via the tongue is not? Come on. Like, that makes no sense. And just the simplest point that I can make is why would anybody want to do that? You're tasting the guy's, you know, salty sweat. Like, it's just gross. It's gross. It has to be put an end to. And it's making a mockery of the game. You can't have that anymore. He needs to be fined to the maximum allowable under the CBA and accompanied with a stern warning that if this happens again, if we need to call you again because of an incident like this, we will find a way to suspend you games, because at this point, it's so far past the point of comical or funny. It's gross. It needs to stop.
Dave McCarthy joins us. Dave is with NHL.com and Sirius XM NHL Radio, talking about the Jets Preds, talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Dave, somewhat lost in all of this is that Brad Marchand was excellent yesterday, and he sets up the go-ahead goal, a beautiful pass to Patrice Bergeron. He had a couple of helpers in last night's game. As you know, he was terrific in round one against the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's got 17 points in 11 games. He's been a fantastic player for many years now. Why does he keep doing this? He's one of their top players on that top line with David Pastrnak and the aforementioned Bergeron. Why does he need to keep doing this? Doesn't he need to take this out of his game?
I don't know. It's a great question. Because he's not at the point in his career where he needs to manufacture and invent ways to keep himself in the league. He's not a periphery player, a marginal player. He's not like a Sean Avery was back in the day where, you know, when he turned around and faced Marty Brodeur, I guess it was in, 2012, waving in his face to get under Brodeur's skin. He doesn't need to come up with things like that to keep himself in the league. As you put it, he's a great player. He's an excellent player. But I don't know if you guys saw the piece that he wrote in the Players' Tribune, Brad, a number of weeks ago, sort of about how he grew up with a number of brothers and always was that antagonist as a kid growing up, and thrived on the chance to get under people's skin. And for a smaller guy, that really fueled him to prove people wrong and maybe get noticed initially when people counted him out because of his size and didn't know what type of skill he had. So that's sort of ingrained in his blood from a young age. So you wonder, okay, well, is that part of his game necessary to get him going and for him to engage himself in the game? And if he stopped doing that, would he disengage from the game to the extent where his skill would not show up? You know, is it a chicken or the egg type of thing where in order for his skill to show up, does he need to play that antagonist's role to get himself engaged in the game? You can never really determine that or put a real determination on that. But there are ways of engaging yourself in the game and getting under guys' skin. You know, you can give guys a bit of a jab after the whistle. You know, you can grind guys down throughout the game. You don't need to lick people in the face, though. I mean, there's just different ways of engaging yourself and playing that pest rat type of role. before you get to licking a guy in the face, where I just look at that and say, everything that I just talked about, does he need that type of thing? Come on, you don't need to lick people in the face. It's the same thing as earlier in the year when he got out to a great start in the regular season playing New Jersey and then comes across with a flying elbow on Marcus Johansson. Like, that had nothing to do with the play at all. Just completely unnecessary, and it really derailed Johansson's season. So don't tell me you need to do something like that to engage yourself in the play, because you were already playing well, and that was so far away from the play, has nothing to do with getting yourself going. So he needs to find a way to still engage himself in the play with the type of things he likes to do, get under people's skin, without doing things that are punitive to his team, getting himself suspended, or things that are as gross as licking people in the face. Come on.
Dave, final question for you here, and it has nothing to do with licking, I promise. You cover the Toronto Maple Leafs. Right now, is Kyle Dubas just sitting there patiently waiting by the phone for Brendan Shanahan to call?
I would think that would be the way this will play out. As it was structured when Lou Lamoriello was hired 3 years ago, he was initially scheduled to remain in the GM portfolio for 3 years before transitioning to the role of senior advisor, and that is how it has played out to this point. And on the day that Lamoriello was hired, he was asked about Dubas and his future within the organization, and Lou said if he doesn't become general manager of this team one day, it will be his fault. As if to say, that pretty much seems like the succession plan that was in place. So by virtue of the fact that Shanahan stuck to his original plan, despite the fact that everything seems to be hunky-dory, team was improving every year, Lou was doing a good job, Lou seemed to want to continue in the role, to make that change, it seems to me that he wants to give Dubas the opportunity and is concerned about potentially losing him to another organization if he doesn't get that opportunity sooner than later. They blocked the Colorado Avalanche from talking to Dubas last summer. I think Shanahan feels that Dubas will get opportunities elsewhere if he isn't promoted in the near future. So I would think that is the plan that is in place. The Marlies are still playing. Dubas still has his hands on that pot. So I would suspect that they're waiting for the Marlies season to be done before they come out and officially announce Dubas is the new general manager. But if I had to guess, I would think that is the plan in place. If it were up to me, I wouldn't have made a change, though. But maybe that's another story for another day.
Dave McCarthy is with NHL.com and SiriusXM NHL Radio. Dave, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
A lot of fun being on the show, guys. Keep well.
We'll do it again soon, Dave. Thanks again. When we come back, more on the Jets-Predators series, talk about the special teams battle being won currently by the Nashville Predators. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Back for Forsberg on the right side. Forsberg in too deep to shoot it. Plays it back to Subban. Scores! PK Subban rips it from the line. And the Nashville Predators on a power play have tied this game up 2-2. Subban drops it off at the line as he and Forsberg switch spots. Right side for Johansson. Forsberg. Subban scores! PK Subban gets this one through Connor Hellebuck. And a power play marker for the Nashville Predators, and the Predators are up 2-0.
Power play goals by PK Subban. That's something you've heard a lot of in this series. He's been dynamite for the Predators with the big booming shot from the point. Philip Forsberg also had a power play goal in Game 3. The Predators, 4 for their last 10 on the power play. The Jets' penalty kill struggling since Game 1. Of this series. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Zappia Group Realty. Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So the Jets power play, pardon me, the Jets penalty kill, struggling in the last three games of this series. They were good in the first game, but the last three games, the Predators have been able to do a fair bit of damage while on the power play. And we know that the Jets penalty kill strategy all season long has been to keep the shots to the outside. Don't let anything come from, let's say, the center of the ice surface. Everything to the outside, and they figure Connor Hellebuck will be able to stop it more often than not. Right now, with the penalty kill struggling, do the Jets need to change things up at all? Maybe get out on P.K. Subban a little bit quicker to prevent him, take that big shot of his away from the point, or do they keep with the status quo that worked pretty well for them throughout the majority of the season, but a lot of hockey analytic types would say that the Jets power penalty kill was sort of a recipe for disaster that right now might be coming home to roost.
Did they not have a top 10 penalty kill during the regular season?
They did, but they said that with the number of shots the Jets were giving up, it was only a matter of time.
Sure,
until
and the Jets were being too passive. I get that, but you know, through any team's penalty kill, they want to keep the shots to the outside.
Yeah.
And that's hockey 101. And like, let's be honest here. I mean, the Predators have some snipers. I mean, you mentioned P.K. Subban, Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, Victor Arvidsson. I mean, they have guys that can shoot the puck. And it's not like the Jets took a lot of penalties last game.
No.
The Preds had two power plays.
Yeah, and they scored on one of them.
Right? So, I mean, that just shows you, I mean, you have to do your best to stay out of the box. And I think the Jets have. I don't think the Jets are having the discipline issues that they had a year ago or 2 years ago. So, I mean, right now, what is Victor Arvidsson doing? He's flying across the front of the net in front of Hellebuck, and he's doing a good job of, you know, screening him all and all of that. But the Jets know that, and the Jets know that against whatever team they're against. I mean, you have to try to box out and let your goaltender see the puck. And I think the Jets, for the most part, do a good job of that. And right now, the Predators' power play is doing better than the Jets' power play. But I think that's going to be a huge key for Game 5 as well, and the Jets capitalizing on their chances. And Nashville, we talked about this after Game 3. Nashville was the most penalized team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And I think earlier on in the series, they were having trouble with their discipline. We talked about it towards the end of
game three.
Kevin Fiala, P.K. Subban, then Pekka Rinne took a slashing penalty. So obviously Peter Laviolette addressed that, and they made some adjustments. They stayed out of the penalty box. You know, the Jets did score a power play goal themselves, but right now Nashville's power play is clicking better in this series. But absolutely, I mean, they have to do a better job of, you know, letting Hellebuck see the puck. And, you know, maybe you do want to be a little bit more aggressive on P.K. Subban, but you have to also respect him. He has the ability to move the puck along the blue line. So I think the Jets are fine. I think Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele, I mean, they had a two-on-one chance,
mm-hmm,
shorthanded. They're excellent penalty killers. And, you know, Brandon Tanev's an excellent penalty killer, Adam Lowry. So, you know, the Jets have the right personnel out there. I think, you know, the Preds' power play has just been really effective, and I don't necessarily think that they have to change anything strategically. At least I haven't seen anything that the Jets are doing that I have a problem with. I mean, the Predators have a good power play. They've scored some power play goals, and, you know, maybe you want to be a little bit more aggressive at times, but, I mean, you know, what else can you say? I mean, the Preds have a talented team here. I mean, they're going to score power play goals. But if anything, you know, that's something that the coaches have to look at. And, you know, if it's maybe, you know, moving one player around or, you know, being a little bit more aggressive on the points, that's something that you maybe have to do.
Dave, do the Jets need to park Victor Arvidsson on his butt one of those times where he does his jumping screen?
I was going to say, Victor Arvidsson right now, to me, is the difference so far on the power play for Nashville. He's been phenomenal. I mean, he's been phenomenal for me all series, but specifically on the penalty kill for the Jets. I mean, Victor Arvidsson's been in front of Connor Hellebuck for three goals that I can think of,
mm-hmm,
in this series. So, to me, that's something that you're thinking to yourself, well, right there, then and there is something that needs to change. You can't allow him to have it. And as he talked about it, Jason Bell talked about it when he had it on, is you just have to allow Connor Hellebuck to see the shot. If Connor Hellebuck sees the shot, even if it's a P.K. Subban blast from the point, he's most likely going to make the save. If the goalie has the ability to see, that's key. If he's in obstructed view, then that's a problem for the team. So to me, yeah, of course you need to be more aggressive, but at the same time, I just think give Hellebuck the opportunity to see the puck.
It'll be a key matchup to watch in Game 5 tonight between the Jets and the Predators. Game 5 start time exactly 10 hours from now. You can hear it here on TSN 1290. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Sean Shapiro of theathletic.com. He covers the Dallas Stars. The Stars have a new head coach. coach. It's Jim Montgomery. Up next, we talk to Sean about that hire for the Dallas Stars. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.